Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 195 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again. We've got an absolutely mega episode today. It's going to start with this national scandal that the CCFR and the Minister of Public Safety, Gary Ananasangri, has found ourselves in concerning this leaked audio of a conversation that the public safety minister had with a tenant who was also a gun owner. And it's a huge scandal. We're also going to talk about the government rolling out its first confiscation pilot project in Cape Breton. I've got all the details of how that's going to work and the problems associated with it. As well, Liberal Minister of Justice Sean Fraser defends Bill C-5, one of the bills of the two bills, so C-5 and C-75. These two bills have resulted in a decade of crime, chaos, and mayhem and violence across the country. And this guy defended it this past week. I don't know what's going on there. Also, the Liberals are telling gun owners that the confiscation program is voluntary. Even the Prime Minister said it. We're going to have a look at that. And we've gotten a few misguided decisions in the Federal Court of Canada. I just want to talk about them for a second because it is mind-boggling what the courts are up to in Canada. Anyway, all that and more. CCFR Radio starts right now. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Ready, Aim, Shop. Bullseye North is where passion meets precision. Discover a huge selection of top-notch rifles, accessories, and ammo. Whether you're perfecting your aim at the range or gearing up for hunting season, Bullseye North has you covered with free shipping on orders over $300, including ammo. Some exclusions apply. Check out bullseyenorth.com and remember to subscribe to their newsletter, bullseyenorth.com. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. All right, we are back now. I've got some bad news to share with you right off the hop. Ms. Wilson will not be joining us in this episode. Yeah, I know. So I've been running around traveling for 8 days. I got home on Monday night late. Tracy's been running around like a maniac as well. Then this hot mic with, you know, leaked audio with of the Minister of Public Safety, Gary Ananasangri, you know, came out, and this buyback pilot came out. All this stuff's happened. So Tracy and I, on top of all that stuff, have been running around like maniacs doing tons of interviews and having to respond to all kinds of requests for just commentary, right? So anyway, I phoned Tracy this morning to see what time we're going to record this, because I'm way late. It's like Wednesday night right now, right? And I'm not even finished recording it, much less editing it and doing all the stuff and then submitting it. So I call her up this morning. I'm like, hey man. She's like, hello. Like, you sound like you're really sick. She's like, I can barely get out of bed. I'm like, don't worry about the podcast. I'll get it done. And the TV show, obviously, I'll get it done. Get some rest, because it has been really crazy. So she's probably run down to the point where she can't get out of bed. Anyway, so in this episode, I have a lot of information for you. A bunch of it is out there circulating in the public. Some of it isn't yet. So it's all very useful. I'm going to try to rattle this stuff off as quickly as I possibly can and be as concise as I can. But there are some really interesting details that I want to share with you in this one. So I'm going to talk about this, the buyback pilot. I'm going to talk about this big scandal, the hot mic scandal. And then I have a couple of other things to leave with you before I let you go at the end. Okay. So the Liberal government is rolling out its confiscation program, what they're calling a buyback. And you know, it's funny because people like don't use their language. It's not a buyback. They never own these things in the first place. Like, I know that. But on top of that, they're not only calling it a buyback, but they're saying you can return these firearms to the government for money. It's like, they were never yours. You never had them. It's not a return. But anyway, if I use the term buyback, don't lose your minds. It's funny. People have been doing that lately. So the confiscation program is rolling out in the form of a pilot project in Cape Breton exclusively. Interesting. The reason why they're able to do that is they have full cooperation from the Cape Breton Police Service. And then somebody said, I don't know if this is true. And if it isn't, you know, don't be like, you're spreading misinformation. I'm telling you flat out, I don't know it's true. But apparently there's some family connection between the police chief in Cape Breton and the Liberal MP there. If that's not true, I take it back right now, because I don't like even saying things if it's not verified, but that wouldn't surprise me. Because of all the people, all the law enforcement agencies saying, this has nothing to do with licensed gun owners. This is all wrong. We don't want any part of it and whatever. This little department's like, yes, we are proud to round up firearms from licensed gun owners, and none at all from criminals. Just kind of strange. And I think I had tweeted something. I said, you know, I'm really curious at what point all of these different people, individuals in law enforcement, or if they will at all, get to a point where they're like, I'm not doing that. That's wrong. That's a waste of money. It's morally wrong. And I'm not doing it. So far, the OPP said they're not doing it. Probably a money thing, but you never know. They might be like, yeah, we're flat out not doing that because it's not right. Cape Breton, no, they're all in and they're proud. So I don't know, kind of interesting. So here are the details for this, what they call phase two. The retail buyback, I think, was phase one. This is phase two. And I guess phase three will be the, you know, the one for everybody across the country. So here are the details. I attended a technical briefing yesterday with public safety. Wilson was there, and our general counsel, Mike Loberg of Loberg Ector in Calgary, was there as well. So the details are, the Canadian Firearms Program, when this thing rolls out, is going to send out a letter to everyone that has a PAL. And it's going to say, there are all these prohibited firearms. You may own one of these things. Go to this web portal and check. And if so, you have to turn it in for compensation. Now, this is going to change. There's some things that are going to just blow your mind coming up in a second. And then so what happens is they have a web portal. It's all built. It's already available to the residents of the 3,100 firearm owners that live in the Cape Breton area already. But basically, when you go there, you put your PAL and all your personal information in there. It will access your records, and it will, this is my understanding from the meeting, is it will self-populate all of your restricted firearms. Remember, these are the ones that are registered that they know you have, like AR-15s or other registered, you know, short-barreled semi-autos or long guns that are less than 26 inches in overall length that are registered as restricted. So restricted firearms are registered. They know you have them. Those will self-populate because you are turning those in. We know you have them, kind of thing, right? And then you can start filling out the rest of the form for all these non-restricted firearms that they don't know that you have that are now prohibs. So you fill all this stuff out, then you hit submit. So the rumors that were floating around that this program has a capped budget are true. So what the government has done is they said, we're allocating $742 million, and that is to compensate gun owners that register and whatever, put in for compensation, compensate them for their firearms if they turn them in for destruction. If you want to deactivate them, you can get reimbursed for the deactivation. So you're going to lose all the money on the firearm, but you're going to have to pay $400 to $700 somewhere in there, right? Let's say $500 to have this thing deactivated. If you're not sure what that is, they weld the action shut, weld a bunch of parts inside, weld the barrel, block the barrel somehow. So it actually isn't a firearm anymore. You can actually take your AR-15 and put it on the wall. It's like a $2,500 piece of art, I guess, for the wall of your home, not a firearm anymore. So anyway, they'll reimburse you for that deactivation, or you can export it, or you can turn it in for free. Now, the payments for the firearms come out of this budget, and the reimbursements for the deactivations come out of this budget. And apparently the retail buyback has come out of that budget as well, is my understanding. I could have that wrong, but that's what I think is going on, because they said that, you know, the budget's already being accessed. When that budget money is gone, there are no more reimbursements for deactivations, and there are no more compensation for those firearms. So what they've done, and you've heard this before probably, but they're saying, hey, gun owners, run into that portal as soon as it's open, as fast as you can, because you're competing with everybody else for compensation. So tell us what you have as soon as you possibly can. Send that information. But it's first come, first served. So if you're too far down the queue, you have told us everything that you have and you aren't getting paid for any of it. You're going to turn it in for free, or you're going to have it, or you're going to pay $500, $400 to $700 to have all of those firearms deactivated out of your pocket, and you'll have to keep them that way. Very interesting. Or, of course, the alternative to that is be a criminal. And yeah, so for me, I told public safety, like, it's not them that are doing it. They're told to do something and they're doing that, right? It's the politicians. But I said, that scheme is diabolical, is what I said to them right there. And it is, it's like, just, it's evil. But anyway, it is what it is. Now I'm just going to skip ahead, because I want to tell you this kind of while we're at it. I had something else I want to tell you before then, but I'm just going to skip ahead. So we had the opportunity to ask questions, and I asked a fair amount of questions, and I'm going to share this information, and this information is going to blow your mind. So I said, okay, $742 million. Some of it's been spent already. You're going to reimburse for deactivations and you're going to compensate for people's firearms. Now, bear in mind, some of these are 50 cals. These are $10,000 rifles. There's a couple of double barrel rifles out there that are worth $100,000 per gun. And it's my understanding that there's a guy somewhere in Canada that has like a dozen of these things or something like that. And so that money is going to get burned up really quick. So I said, how many rifles are you guys budgeting to pay for? Because they've done some fairly complicated calculation. And what they told me was they are prepared to pay for 152,000 firearms. And I went, in total? I guess I can't. I'm paraphrasing myself now because I can't remember, right? Because I was writing things down. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, what? There's somewhere around 90,000 ARs. You know about those, plus some other restricteds that you know about that are now prohibs. And the fellow from public safety said, yeah, we know those numbers. So we're going to pay for a total of 152,000 rifles or shotguns or whatever, firearms. We know that there are 126,000 and change restricted firearms. So those are going to pop up on your portal, self-populate. And so those are all the ARs and all the other guns that are restricted by barrel length or by name or by overall length. And I'm like, okay, you're paying for 152. You're telling me you know about restricted and registered 126. And then some of the budget's already been used up for the retail buyback. So like what, 20,000 firearms you expect on top of that? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, what? 20,000? Like, you guys have prohibited like GSG 16s, GSG 15s, all the other GSGs, like 22s, right? All these 50 cals, like 800 models that were more or less immediately prohibited as variants by the RCMP. So you did 1,550 plus another 800 or 900. And then you did the second ban, the second OIC, which was like, what was it? 324 models or something, but like 330 models on top of that, plus any variants to those. And then another, whatever it was, wasn't a lot. The third one was, I even forget what it was, but like 30 models or something. It wasn't a lot. Somebody will correct me on that. But I mean, we're talking like, I don't know what, 3,000 models of firearms. and you can account for the ARs and a handful of restricteds, like all the rest of that, like all these AR-180 clones, the just like all the rest of this stuff, and you think you're gonna, it's 20,000 firearms? Like I would think, and I don't know, because we don't know, nobody knows really. I would think there's another, like there's hundreds of thousands more. Like I would think. The Ruger PC carbines, right? Carbines that they had, the Sterling Arms, like, what? So let's say for sake of argument, it's one or two or three or 400,000 more firearms. You're budgeting for another 20,000 and everyone's in a race to tell you what they have, knowing full well that you're going to be like, yeah, we're not going to pay for them. I don't know. And then all those people, even if they're like, okay, well, I'll disable them. It's like, well, yeah, you pay $500, $600, $700 out of pocket for every firearm yourself to disable it. And we'll let you keep that. Or you just hand it in for nothing. Like, holy smokes, man. I was like, wow. I don't even know what to say about that. But they're like, oh, we're pretty confident in our numbers. I'm like, okay. I don't even know what to say about that right now, actually. Anyway, we're just going to move on. So if you want to find out what your firearms are worth, they have an online tool. I'll put a link in the description box for that tool. And the search function works fairly well. So if you just type in Ruger, you'll see all the Rugers, the PC carbines, all the rest of that stuff, plus everything else that they banned that was Ruger. You can type in WS for the WSMCR. You'll find those firearms. I tried it on a whole bunch of different firearms. It works pretty well. And you can see all the prices. The prices are slightly low. And on top of that, when you buy a firearm, you're paying tax. You're paying in BC, you're paying two taxes. In Ontario, you're paying HST, which is what, 12%? So you're buying that firearm, you're paying 12% on top of it. If you bought it through the mail, then you're, you know, shipping and whatever. So you're not getting paid for any of that stuff. And some of these prices are a little bit low. One that I found, and I know that there are others, but one that I found was the Sterling Arms R9 Mark I. So that's a really nice rifle. And people have been using that for competition shooting. And it runs about $1,800. The government says they're paying you $600 for it. And I brought that up. I said, the R1 says $600. And they're like, yeah, we're pretty confident in the numbers that we got. I'm like, what? Like some of the others make sense. Some of the others are pretty close, but they seem to be close, but just slightly low. So the government's trimming a little bit of your money off, right, to help save them from this, you know, horrible boondoggle that they're going to wear, this albatross that they're going to wear around their necks at some point, right? Politically speaking. And yeah, anyway, you can check all those prices. That's out there. So then I also found in their documentation, they say that the lower is considered the complete firearm. So that's interesting to me there too. So the lower is the complete firearm. And so I said, does that mean just when you say the lower, it's just a lower, like a stripped lower? Because if you think about it, it's just like, here's the lower, here's the piece. And then you add components to make a complete lower. But they seem, and I don't think I was getting any kind of, we weren't having a real good conversation. Like they didn't really know a strip lower versus a lower. But anyway, I believe that what they're saying is all the lower parts have to be in there. If you have like a Geissele trigger or something like that, I'm sure you can remove that and put the old stock trigger back in there. And that's the same. Maybe it just sort of has to cycle. I don't know if you're familiar with an AR lower, you can push the hammer back with your thumb and pull the trigger and it slams forward. Maybe that's what they're saying. The uppers for ARs and specific firearms are prohibited devices like hand grenades and landmines, remember. So what their idea is, you're giving the complete lower, that is the complete firearm, and you're turning in the uppers to have them destroyed so you're not caught with them. And they're going to destroy that for you for free. I guess you don't have to pay for that. So anyway, take from that what you will, but the lower is a complete firearm. The uppers are still prohibited. Now, the one thing, the Crusader Arms crypto. So you have to destroy the crypto, hand it in for destruction with no compensation. And I asked about that, and they said the crypto was prohibited, and people never should have bought it. That is the because it was a variant of an AR-15. That's what they're saying. That's their opinion. And I'm like, wait a minute. And I'm not going to litigate this with you guys. I'm not going to litigate this with public safety because it's not my thing to argue about. It's Crusader Arms. It's their issue to argue about, right? So basically, when the crypto was designed, it was designed to be not an assault style firearm as per Bill C-21. It was designed specifically to be non-restricted with a barrel that was long enough, with a proprietary magazine, and it was a 5-round magazine, and it was a semi-auto. It fits completely the definition of a non-restricted firearm as far as the criminal code is concerned, and it is not interchangeable. None of the parts are interchangeable, like the receiver is not interchangeable, nor the upper with an AR-15. So they're out there, and you don't need a firearms reference table listing, an FRT, to sell a domestically produced firearm. So Crusader Arms threw that out there. They're like, okay, no FRT required. This meets the requirements of a non-restricted firearm, and they sold it. And then later, the firearms lab comes back and says, this is a variant of an AR-15, stamps prohib on it. When they stamped prohib on it, everyone that had bought it had already bought one of those. So the way that I look at things is it was legal, and then it was reclassified as prohibited later. So I don't know. I guess the reason why I'm telling you that is if you own one of these, it is prohib and you're not getting compensated, at least as that's what they're saying right now. And they're giving some strange explanation for that. So if you have one, I don't know whether you just go turn it in or you call the police or you destroy it yourself and pretend you never had. I don't know. I have no answers what they want from you for that, but they're not going to pay you anything for it. Okay, so I learned that. Now, going backwards. All right, I found it. Now, Mark Carney, so moving on from the buyback, Mark Carney and everyone else, all the other liberals, including the Minister of Public Safety, Gary and Anna Sangari, have been saying that this program is voluntary. And I remember if you remember, there's a guy named Ryan Jesperson, got kind of a YouTube show, used to be on the radio. I don't know if he still is, but he had Mark Carney, the prime minister, on there. And of course, it was ultra softball. You're not going to get Carney on there if you're going to ask him real questions, obviously. But nonetheless, good on him for getting the prime minister of Canada on there. But he said that this program was voluntary. Well, he said a couple things. He said it was voluntary, and these are not like, you know, firearms for hunting or sporting use. These are serious. These are assault weapons, and they're serious weapons. So, of course, if I were to take issue with that, I mean, it's ridiculous. They are all hunting firearms and sport shooting firearms. That's all they are, because they were used. They were approved by the RCMP and the government for decades upon decades in Canada. And that's all they were used for, those two purposes. They are exactly what you would use for hunting or sport shooting. And they are not assault weapons, because assault weapons were banned in Canada since 1977. And all of these guns had FRTs and were listed as such, hunting and sport shooting. So whatever, man, just more gaslighting. And I guess the 22s and the double barrel rifles that are 100 years old, and the single shot rifles in there, those are all assault weapons too, right? Serious weapons. Nonetheless, so he says this is voluntary. And then Ananda Sangari has come out and said, oh, this is voluntary too. Well, it's weird. He actually had an argument about this definition of voluntary with the guy on the hot mic, right? Which I'll tell you about in a second. But you can volunteer to turn your firearms in for destruction for no compensation, race with other gun owners to get compensation, deactivate it at your cost, or maybe you'll get that covered if you're in soon enough, or export it, or go to jail. That's what you can volunteer for. So if they had given us a grandfathering option, then you could call that voluntary, because you could have kept it and still used it and passed it down if your kids had the proper license. But they didn't take that. So to call it voluntary and then claim that anyone that says that it's not is misleading you, crazy. I guess that's just what you'd always expect. So anyway, here's a clip of first Carney saying it's voluntary, and then Ananda Sangari saying it's voluntary, and then here I left this part in. He goes on. This was in the press conference for the buyback. He goes on to say, "Oh, by the way, there's 19,000 models still available for you to use for hunting or sport shooting." It's funny. You know, the RCMP are coming up with lists of hundreds of guns now. Well, first they do, you know, thousands of guns that are prohibited, right? They ban them. Then the RCMP bans a whole bunch more. There's still, like, it's still 19,000 left all the way through all these bans. I don't know how their math works, but it's ridiculous, right? But just pure propaganda. I thought that was supposed to slow down under Carney, but I guess it doesn't.
Have been instructed not to participate in any gun confiscation. What do you intend to do on the firearms file specifically? And what do you make of Premier Smith's position?
I'm not going to, the exact quote, maybe I'll leave the quote aside, but I'll pick up one word there, confiscation. This is not about confiscation. This is about voluntary return of firearms for compensation, compensation. Of these firearms. We're not confiscating guns. People aren't going around confiscating guns. Anyone who says that is a mischaracterization. What it is an opportunity for Canadians to return guns for compensation. And let's, you know, be clear. We are not talking about hunting rifles. We're not talking or sport shooting or anything like that. We're talking about assault rifles. We are talking about weapons of, serious weapons, let's put it that way.
This program is voluntary. Nobody is having their weapon confiscated. People who use rifles to hunt can still hunt. If you want to purchase a hunting rifle, there are 19,000 legal options available in the Canadian market.
Okay, well, there you have it. All right, we're going to move on. Now, this is the big story, the hot mic scandal. So here's the backstory on this. In the middle of this whole thing, obviously, is the CCFR and Gary Ananda Sangari and a tenant of Gary's. So the backstory to this is that Gary, I guess, owns some properties. He's a landlord as well as the Minister of Public Safety and a lawyer as well, by the way. So I guess he's got this tenant who's a gun owner. Gary wasn't doing what he was supposed to, like had things that he wasn't fixing on the property or whatever it was. Goes to the property to talk to his tenant. His tenant's a gun owner, supporter of the CCFR. And this tenant records this conversation on his phone because for the reason, not to do with anything for Gary's job, but just so that he could hold Gary's feet to the fire if he didn't fix these things. That was the reason, is my understanding. I spoke to this gentleman myself. So then Gary breaks in voluntarily, breaks in to tell this guy, I guess he wants to be his buddy, and tell this guy, hey, by the way, that we're rolling this buyback out, and they get into this big discussion. And I'm not going to get into all of it because I'm sure most of you have seen all the clips floating around. But basically, he tells the tenant that this is all for votes in Quebec, that he's being forced to do it because it was a promise on, you know, in the campaign. Carney's making him do it. If he were to do it all over again, he wouldn't do this whole thing, wouldn't have done these bans. He would actually do bail reform and try to close down, you know, fill the holes in the border, like just exactly what you should be doing. And you know, he agrees that it's ridiculous. Like, don't even ask him to explain the logic. Like, liberals are, it's liberals tell the truth when they think no one is listening, right? And that's the only time they'll tell the truth. And then he's saying that it is voluntary, gets into this argument with the tenant. And then he says, well, you know, it's voluntary. You don't have to comply with it. Basically, you can not comply. You can not hand anything in. And he's like, yeah, well, then I'll go to jail. And then Ananda Sangari says, oh, well, I'll bail you out at my own cost if you end up in jail. Like, what? So he's counseling someone to commit an offense. Number one, he's a lawyer. He probably should get disbarred for that. But what do I know? And then he's like, oh, yeah, I'll cover your bail if you get arrested and you're charged with all these charges. And then he's like, oh, yeah, and the prices are crappy, so I'm going to get screwed. And he's like, you just let me know what the discrepancy between what the government's going to pay you for all these prohibited firearms and what they cost, and I will give you the difference out of my pocket. Like, you listen to it, and it's like he's trying to be this guy's friend. And you're like, I don't know what he's doing. So anyway, pretty crazy. So he says all this stuff. This recording exists now. Now, before that, and this is how this recording came to be, before that, when after the election, this is what I want to add, after the election, we thought, okay, well, here's a reset. You got a new figurehead. Fine. They won an election. The liberals won an election on like give Donald Trump the finger. And, you know, Pierre's cruel and mean. And they won. So whatever, be that as it may. We looked at that and Carney actually committed that everyone has a place at the table. Everyone who calls Canada home. And I'm like, okay, well, we have no choice but to take him at his word. So we're requesting meetings, ignoring us. We're going through every channel we possibly can. Then we get a response like, yeah, you're not needed right now. So a couple of things were, you know, so whatever. And then we're like, okay, we come out with this grandfathering thing. Like, hey, listen, meet with us. Here's an opportunity to not spend $1 billion, which is exactly what they're spending. Not take people's guns by force. You know, you get half of the solution that you wanted and you're going to save all this money and you're going to quell some anger. So they're just like, nope, we're not doing any of that. And no, you're not getting a meeting. Then Wilson goes as far as to go down to Wellington Street and wait to talk to Gary or talk to anyone else in his department, because this is important, right? Nope. They dodge it. You know, we can't even ambush them for a meeting. So it's like, okay, well, if they're going to act exactly like the old crew acted, then we got nothing to lose. So the gun owner that made that recording sent it to us to release it. And we did. And we released this thing. And of course, it set fire to Gary and Anna Sangari's career and the buyback. And it's been in the news cycle for 2.5 days straight, which is a long time in the Canadian news cycle. And oddly enough, probably reluctantly, most of the legacy media picked it up. Some did a terrible job, like the CBC was like, you know, this leaked recording that basically says this is a cynical political play. Their headline was, minister admits that he lacks the resources to carry out the buyback. You know, like just like horrible. Anyway, that really awful stuff. But regardless of all that, it was really big in the news cycle. And we've done all these interviews and what have you. And then comes time, obviously, for Gary to respond to that. So the first thing, and this is, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people and I tell people, like, this is the thing that really bothers me, is that we are in such a place in Canada right now that the only, like, the first reflex for politicians or media people or whatever, all these bad people that are around, their first instinct when they're going to be held accountable for something they totally did is just lie. Just lie. Just start telling lies. Just gaslight people and it'll all go away. And I think Canadians have caught on to this and they're sick of it. So anyway, check out this clip of Gary lying in response.
Rule of law, why did you offer to pay someone the difference in compensation and bail them out of jail? You're a minister. Why'd you say that?
Let's maybe put this in context. This was a private conversation with an individual that I've known for many years. I said these two issues in bad humor, that is being misinterpreted. It is very clear that there was a private conversation. It is with someone. It is an acquaintance.
Do we believe what you said on the phone?
Well, first of all, it's not the phone. It was in the context of a private conversation in person. What is important is that if you look at it in context, that was not a serious attempt. It was a bad attempt at humor on my part. It was in no way to suggest that they will either I will bail them out or otherwise. That is not.
Is it a subject you should do humor about?
Let's look at the context of it. It was a 20-minute conversation. And
I can't tell you that I don't like seeing that kind of thing, but yeah, I just, you know, he's just getting lit up. So good on the media for doing your job. I'm going to say it, doing your job for once. I'm grateful that you even did it this time. And so thank you for that. And I appreciate media bringing us on to talk about it because it's really a big deal. And also media has been bringing us on to talk about the buyback rollout, the confiscation program. So we appreciate that as well. But yeah, really getting roasted. And now I'm not going to play you all the clips because so many have been circulating around. You don't need to see them again. But here's a little bit of some clips that I'm going to, so a few clips I'm going to show you because it's just amazing. And I'm going to start with this one. Gary's getting lit up on the House of Commons so bad, they even actually pulled him off and had Ruby Sahota answer all these questions after. But he's getting lit up so bad. What does he do? He actually tries to make himself out as the victim of all this. Forget about what he said. Forget about him telling the truth when he thought no one was listening. He's actually the victim in all this.
Member for Kamloops, Thompson-Nicola.
The public safety minister told the truth. It's true. He spoke about how this confiscation buyback is an incredible boondoggle. Now let's actually hear what he had to say. This is the mandate I was given by the Prime Minister to complete this and not revisit this. Sounds like he doesn't even believe in this. So if the Public Safety Minister doesn't believe in this program, why are we spending $742 million taxpayer dollars to keep it going?
Hear, hear. Great.
The Honourable Minister of Public Safety.
Mr. Speaker, I've addressed this issue a number of times, but let me just make it very personal, Mr. Speaker. The last 4 months in this role as Minister of Public Safety, I've received a great deal of vitriol from the gun lobby, Mr. Speaker. If you go into my social media accounts, you will see hundreds, if not thousands, of comments of hatred that's coming through the gun lobby, Mr. Speaker. What the party opposite is doing is reinforcing that. We have a serious plan to ensure that guns are off our streets. That's why we will be going forward and implementing this program, Mr. Speaker. I invite the party opposite to come on board and ensure that our streets are safe.
I'm going to move on. But other than to say this whole thing has been fun, I'm glad we did it. And I'm glad we're holding someone to account for what they've said and what they've done. So that is one satisfying thing, despite everything else that's going on right now. Now, I've had you guys on, you know, listening to me for a long time. I don't even like listening to me this long. So I'm just going to kind of rush through the last couple of things. So Sean Fraser, I'm sure you guys saw this. I'm not going to show you anything because I don't have it. But if you remember, it was just a couple of days ago, he was defending Bill C-5. So if you remember, the Liberals came out with two bills. They were Bill C-5 and Bill C-75. And it was those two bills that have created this 10 years of crime, violence, and mayhem in Canada. It's never been worse in Canadian recorded history. And it was really those two bills. I mean, the judges have a part to play in that too, but those two bills. So Sean Fraser, who's now the Minister of Justice, first he blows up the immigration system as immigration minister. He blows up the housing market as Minister of Housing, and now he's in justice. Can you imagine? I mean, I can't believe that he didn't actually write those two bills, for God's sakes. And now he's got this new anti-hate legislation. So, you know, now all of Gary and Ananda Sangari has to do is be like, I'm getting all this vitriol from the gun lobby. It's like, we don't send any vitriol to you. No, it's a gun lobby. Charge him with a hate crime. Who knows what's coming, right? But anyway, so Fraser says, oh, Bill C-5 is really awesome. Like, everybody knows it's not awesome, for God's sake. People are getting killed because of that bill. No, it's really awesome. And Pierre Poilievre just doesn't understand how great the bill is, right? I don't know if you saw that. I'm not going to find it now because I'm really low on time. But yeah, remarkable. We're just the gaslighting and the lying. It's just remarkable. Anyway, just definitely worth mentioning. These people haven't learned a thing. And they're not going to stop. So anyway, last thing I wanted to cover with you was some wild court decisions. So I don't know if you remember, a little while back, I talked about the federal court ruling on a case that single-use plastics, in particular plastic straws and plastic shopping bags, for them to be prohibited and withheld from the population of Canada, from the citizenry, is a step too far. It's government overreach. And of course, when I heard that, my mind exploded. I'm like, wait a minute, CCFR versus Canada, you guys ruled that and we lost in the Court of Appeal too, by the way, that the government of Canada can use an order in council, right? Like just a legal instrument, no democratic process, just order in council to make multi-billion dollar changes to the law, right? Like banning 3,000 models of firearms and then roll out a compensation program all on an OIC. And that's completely fine. Even when the criminal code has a passage in there that's supposed to prevent that from happening, you're like, we can override that with an OIC, you know? And the court's like, of course you can. That's not overreach. Taking property from hundreds of thousands of people and telling them that you're not going to compensate them. You're just going to turn them into criminals if they don't do it. Even making them, if they want to try to stay away from being a criminal, make them pay $500 a gun out of their own pockets to deactivate them. And that's completely fine. But plastic straws, plastic shopping bags, that's where we draw the line. Well, another case has come out that is even worse, man. I don't know if you've seen this one. Check this out. So the federal court has determined that bike lanes are a right. So Ontario Appeals Court ruling that blocked Toronto bike lane removals. So basically, here's the piece I'm going to read. Justice Paul Chabas ruled on July 30th that the removal of certain bike lanes would, quote, put people at increased risk of harm and death, which engages the right to life and security of the person, end quote. He's saying that this is a charter violation, that the lack of bike lanes is a danger and engages that section of the, what is it, section 7 or 6 or 7 of the charter, the security of person. But apparently the Court of Appeals in Canada doesn't think that taking firearms from people, especially in this unprecedented time of crime, violence, and chaos, that doesn't engage the charter. And we did, we forwarded a protection of life argument in our case. And it's like, no, you know, taking all your firearms away when there's people invading people's homes with guns, that doesn't put you at risk. You have no, that doesn't engage a charter. Can you imagine this lunacy? I don't know what's going, it is upside down world here. That's, bike lanes are now in the charter, basically. You can trigger the charter with trying to take a bike lane out so cars could drive down there. Just ridiculous. Anyway, all right. I have more things to talk about, but I'm not going to do it because I've been talking so long, I can't even stand to listen to myself anymore. So thank you, everybody, for hanging in there. I really appreciate it. Last, I'm going to throw out one thank you. Last weekend, I was at this reclaiming conference, and it was very interesting. It was a good time, and some of our field officers manned the booth there. It was a pretty small show. There was probably too many of them. It wasn't required, but people just showed up to work that booth and to hang out with me. And those people are Karen Leckie, Joel, of course, Connor Ware, and Harvey, all from Alberta, came out to support that show and to support me being there and stuff. And I just want to say thank you so much for spending your weekend with me and with the CCFR. Really appreciate it. Okay, I've been talking so long, I'm coughing. That's it. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Take care. Yeah, I guess we'll see you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.